Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
In this podcast, chat about the games of the week, our key takeouts, and the picks for praise. This is the Borough Breakdown Podcast, and this is our Borough Matchday Chatter in a pod.
Support. Curtis Fleming is there on the edge of the air. Fleming for That's Craig it. Hignett. Hit it, Higgy. Higgy hits the treble!
Abanelli coming alive again. Janino wants the ball played to him. Abanelli spots out.
Hello and welcome to the Borough Breakdown Podcast with Johnny, Dana and Matt. We are the Borough Podcast that gives you all of your Borough Matchday chatter in a podcast. And this week's results seen Borough go to ninth place in the Championship table on 63 points. We are now unbeaten in nine games. It's our best run since 2020 when we were unbeaten in 10. Guys, key takeouts from the week. Obviously, away to Hull and to Ipswich. Dana, what is your key takeout from the two draws of the week?
Probably that I'm really optimistic and positive about next season. I think the two games this week against Hull and Ipswich have been really quite enjoyable, and they've given me a lot of positives to take from that. We've got a settled team now, and I know it's not still our full strength 11, but I think you can see that things are being put in place for next season as well. And I guess by that, I just mean that we've got a striker there in Latte Lath who's on fire at the moment. We've got a right back in Luke Ayling, who I know last season I said I wouldn't like to see back next season, but I think he's building that connection there with Latte Lath, and maybe that's something that we can still see next season. And I think there's players that are gradually growing and improving still. So I am, very, very optimistic looking towards next season. Unfortunately, this season looks like it's just gone with that draw against Hull. But there's still positives to take. Unbeaten, as you said, in nine games. That's a really positive thing to implement and grow confidence ahead of next season, we hope.
Yeah, hope is the key word there, I think. Yeah. We've been let down by Borough far too many times. But Matt, how are you feeling? What's your key takeout for the week?
I'd echo that. I think I echo as well the title of this podcast, Glass Half Full. I think the bigger picture is that these were two very good results, and I think at any other stage in the season we'd be praising these results probably a lot more. I think maybe the whole result didn't seem as positive at the time because it essentially did finish any hopes we had of the playoffs. So it was like a little bit of a blemish on the result. But if you take a step back, I think going to Hull and going to Ipswich and playing like we did, getting the two results in the manner we did, last scoring again in both games. Yeah, the foundations are clearly there for next season. Dana mentioned it's not even our full strength team. So I think just taking a step back and looking at the side, how it can improve just with the players within the squad coming back, and hopefully the lack of an over-reliance on loans like last summer, as well as hopefully Borough improving the squad and investing in the squad. Surely, and I say surely tentatively because this is Middlesbrough Football Club, tentatively I'm confident that we can only improve and we can only get better next season. And as long as we don't give the rest of the Championship an 8-game head start and we don't go winless until October, next season should be, if it's anything like this one, a step in the right direction, which should mean progression and should mean hopefully a playoff push at the very least. So I'm positive long term, as much as obviously it's a shame that essentially these two games wrote off our season if it wasn't wrote off already.
Yeah, and I think for me, I'll stay positive to some extent. I think it's positive that we're still 9 unbeaten, but I definitely felt like although we got 2 points, I just felt like we could have easily got 6. It's just from the chances that we create and we don't put them away. And it's like the biggest, I don't know, biggest frustration for me this season, where we've created so many great chances and it's just fell to the wrong person, or we've missed a glorious chance and we do some really stupid shit to give like a team an opportunity to get back into games. So for Hull, it was, you know, the Dieng pass and O'Brien getting caught and, you know, them going ahead and we had to do a lot of work to get there. And then yesterday was very much we were very unlucky with Matt Clark's header. But when it went through it with Jones, he had to bury it, but he never. And it's just like those little things where we just hasn't went our way. And the season for me has been a lot of what ifs. But if things went our way, we could be a lot higher, but it didn't. So, but yeah, overall though, I would say I'm fairly positive from where we're at. 9 unbeaten is brilliant, but we have to keep building on it now. And you've got to build it in the summer, and you've got to build it in the right direction. You can't be selling all your team, which has been very boring the last couple of years, but we'll see how it goes. But let's chat about the games. Midweek, we went to Hull and went ahead, then fell behind, and then equalised with Finazzez on the counter. But Dana, what was your overall assessment of Boro's draw at the Hull City Stadium, or the MKN, as it's now called?
Yeah, you know what? I thought it was a really enjoyable game. It was an open contest between two sides that I think knew that it was a big opportunity for them to close that gap to Norwich, 4 points. And I was quite scared towards the end of the game because I proper wanted us to win it, but at the same time, I didn't want us to lose it. And we started the game really brightly. I think we were connecting quite well through the thirds, and obviously we got ourselves in front with good play down that left-hand side through firstly Clark, then Engel, then Latte Lath, and it was a really good composed finish from Latte Lath, you have to say that. And I really want to emphasise composed there because it's something that he's maybe lacked this season. But going back to what I said at the beginning, we're seeing him getting that composure now with some of the chances that he's taken, which is also a positive to look towards next season with. And yeah, I think with that goal, it showed that we were trying to target them down that left-hand side or down their right-hand side because they were set up very much in a very familiar setup to what we saw last season with Borough, that 3-2-5. And Regan Slater was the fullback that was getting really high advanced up the pitch. And obviously with that, you do have that space in behind. And I did notice there was a lot of space, obviously behind him, but also between him and right centre-back Alfie Jones. So I think Borough tried to target that. And obviously they reaped their rewards with a goal. So we played our ace card there. But then I feel like it kind of started to be a little bit detrimental to us because we lost control of the game. It was because we just kept giving the ball away. I know that we obviously scored from that avenue and that was definitely a point of vulnerability from Hull, but I just wanted to see us retain possession, manage the game better. We didn't. And then we gave up a lot and I think it pushed Hull onto us and there was points where they looked really dangerous in and around our box. I don't know whether they necessarily were or whether I was just at a nervous position, but they did have about 6 players in the box at multiple points. And then when I rewatched the game, there was one point where every single outfield player, all 10 of them, were in the frame. So they pushed us right back and we were massively under pressure. And I was just thinking, get to half time, recuperate, breathe a little bit, and then we'll perform better in the second half as we typically see from Borough. But we massively shot ourselves in the foot, didn't we? The first goal is, it's one of those where Dieng just doesn't really see it coming. I think he expects a touch off Ozan Toufan and it just doesn't happen and it goes in the back of the net. But that second one, as you alluded to, Johnny, is just another case of Borough shooting themselves in the foot and essentially handing a massive advantage to the opponent. And I thought the second half was better from us. I did notice that Matt Clark was pushing quite high onto Hull playmakers. Perhaps Carrick wasn't happy with how they were influencing the game, both Omer and Fabio Carvalho. So I was quite happy with that. I thought Clark was excellent in that game. But to be fair, we had periods of possession in that second half, but I just didn't think we were that threatening with it. It didn't feel like we were that threatening with it. As in, I didn't think that we were going to go on to get that winner after we equalised. Yeah, I don't know. I still think Hull kind of controlled the game without the ball because, yeah, it didn't feel like we were as threatening in the same way as they were with their possession in the first half. But all in all, it was an enjoyable game. And I know that it did kind of massively dented our playoff hopes. It pretty much shut the door on us, didn't it? But I enjoyed the game and that's kind of what I'm going to take from it mostly.
Yeah, and I just want to talk about the Dieng back pass, Matt, because is that a weakness for Borough? We've been caught a couple of times now from playing out from the back. And I know, look, when you are going to do that type of football, you are going to get caught at some point. Every team that does it does get caught. But do you think it's a weakness that Borough just don't know when to mix it up?
I love how you come to me when it's about how my semi making such a clanger. But it's true. I think it's high risk, high reward, isn't it? I think it can really, really, when it works really effectively. And we've scored some beautiful goals from playing out from the back at times, and it's a great way of getting through the opposition. But I do think it's a case of doing it when the time is right. And a couple of times this season when Borough have been under pressure in games, we've insisted on continuing to play out from the back, when even for a period, we might be best just going long for 10 minutes just to get us up the pitch, push up the pitch, just relieve the pressure. So I do think at times in games, we do bring it on ourselves a little bit by continuing to play out from the back, losing possession in our own half, and then it just allows the opposition to just get right back on top of us again. So there is a time and a place for it, and I think we were under pressure quite a bit in that game, and I don't think the pass was ever on. I think O'Brien was always going to be in a bit of a 50-50 with Seri to get to it. So I don't put any blame on Lewis O'Brien in that situation. I think it was tough for him. Seri should have just looked at that and thought, that pass isn't on, I'm going to play it long and just get us out of trouble. So it can be a weakness, but it can also be a massive, massive strength. It's just about doing it when the time's right, and then mixing up as well. So the opposition isn't always expecting us to play out from the back. If we mix it up a little bit, they might not know whether to come, whether to go. And with Lafts running in behind as well, we can always utilise that too. So, yeah, it's a shame that it was so costly in the end. I'm not against us continuing to do it in the future as long as we do it at the right time and we do it in the right way.
Yeah, I think on that as well, like, I kind of feel like we miss Matt Crooks a little bit when we do this, because, you know, when you have that outlet of someone who's a bit taller, you know, can throw himself about a little bit, it gives you the opportunity to play along and a bit more effectively. Or if you are going to play along, I would like to see our wing backs or our wingers get really wide. So you just mitigate that strength. So then when something's out wide, as wide as it is, like, yeah, I don't know, you just don't have that vulnerability in the middle. So it's like, I think if we are to play out, just try and find those areas. But I agree with you, though, Matt. It can be seen as a really big strength and a really big weakness at times. But it's on the player. You can never say it's just on the manager. I think a player needs to know when to play out from the back and then when to.
But also, I think Dieng's distribution has to be better. Like in the last two games, I've noted in particular, there was a few moments actually in the second half of the whole game where I think he just completely lost his ability to actually kick the ball to a teammate. He just kept hoofing it out of play for a throw-in, and I was like, that's quite unlike Dieng, because I think his distribution is on the whole a net positive for us. But I just think in the recent games, the last two games, I have noticed that his distribution long and that kind of mid ball to the fullback has just been off. He's just chipped it way over their heads. So that's something to maybe look out for. I'm not going to say that he's completely lost the plot, but yeah, in the last two games, I think he really needs to improve his distribution.
Yeah, and just on that as well, like I'm keen to see what we could do outside of that distribution, because, you know, when we do play from the back sometimes, we create that opportunity to get teams from running. Well, we play through a press and then we get through and we look really dangerous, and it's like kind of that false transition, quotation marks, false transition. We look to become very dangerous and we set some big issues on different teams. But Borough's equaliser, it came from a counter. Hilariously, Ryan Giles got caught a little bit by Isaiah Jones, which was quite funny. But do we think that's where Borough are most effective in those moments on transition, counter-attack? Just be keen to hear what you guys think about that, to be honest.
Yeah, I really like us playing counter-attacking football in the periods in games in which we do. And I will preface this by saying there's nothing inherently wrong about the way that Borough set up at the moment. It's absolutely fine. However, I think looking towards next season, I would quite like us to enable more quick transitions, more counter-attacks. We average 4 passes per sequence this season, which is the 5th most patient approach, shall I put it, in the league. And it's like, can we be a little bit quicker with the ball? Can we relinquish a little bit of possession to enable those counter-attacking situations? It's like, we don't need pace searing through the team. Of course, that helps. But I think ball carriers are quite important to them, and I think we do have ball carriers in the team. There's one player that he might not be here next season, but Lewis O'Brien would massively benefit from counter-attacking football. We saw against Leicester he was pivotal to that win because of his ball carrying ability, so he's somebody that I think would benefit massively from a slight tweak. It's not massive changes, it's just a slight tweak in our approach. It's like, can we maybe enable more pressing triggers to try to catch the opponent, well, in midfield or high turnovers. I do remember at the beginning of the season looking at Opta Analyst, and we were quite high in terms of high turnovers. I don't believe that we are now. I'm going to have to check it out, but it's just something that I quite like to see from us. I think Jones, Latilath, Azaz, Hackney, McGree, even Force, I think these players would benefit from more counter-attacking situations within games. We saw it last season. We scored the most goals in the league from counter-attacking situations. And I know that we scored a lot of goals. So maybe by default, maybe by virtue of that, we were always going to be high in that ranking. But we have seen a Michael Carrick team benefit from those particular type of attacks before. And I think Azaz could be the fulcrum to that because of his passing ability, his vision and his shooting as well. So it's just something that I'd like to see from next season. I really, really like Michael Carrick's Middlesbrough playing those quick transitions and just moving the ball a little bit quicker.
I think it's no coincidence as well that we've had a lot of positive results and a lot of joy away from home this season, because I think in a lot of games, especially against a lot of the top sides, we are having to sit back a little bit, relinquish possession and be a little bit more on the counter. And it's just, you look at the trend, I guess, of Borough's away form and home form at home, you know, we're not likely, unless we are playing a really top side, to be playing counter-attacking football at home. The onus is on us to have the possession and break teams down, and we've struggled with that a lot this season, given the amount of sides near the bottom of the table who have took points off us at home, which, you know, that has cost us playoffs, in my opinion. I think it's clear to see, you look at our away form, some of the goals we've scored away from home, our performances away from home compared to what we do at the Riverside, there clearly is a strength in how we counter-attack and what we're like on the transition. I think for me, if we carry that into next season, we'll only improve away from home. It's at home where we need to maybe try and find another way of breaking down these sides. And I think once we do that, we hopefully should be flying.
I think Carrick could maybe take a leaf out of Matt Robins' book at Coventry. I know that, are they below us in the table at the moment?
Just above.
Oh, just above. So, my opinion here isn't saying that they're an infinitely better team than us, but we have seen Michael Carrick come undone against a Matt Robins side. I don't actually know whether they play counter-attacking football anymore, Coventry. I'm just assuming that they do because they did last season. It's just about maybe conceding a little bit of control, i.e. a little bit of possession. And it's not like massively, it's not having about 2% of the ball. It's just a little bit less possession. Can we get Jones into space? Jones is really good in space because he can run, he could be direct. I think when you have somebody and he's facing a fullback one-on-one, I don't really see that ability for him to get in that space in behind anymore. Jones is a very good player in connecting with players around him rather than just taking a player on one-on-one. So can we maybe facilitate a different approach, like a slightly different tweak to get our core attacking players performing just that little bit better? And I think maybe looking towards next season, counter-attacking football could be that.
Yeah, and you know, it's just interesting, isn't it, how like you can have control. And a lot of it was mentioned in Rossini's post-match as well around control and who looks more dangerous. And I feel like there's a misconception of football sometimes that if you have the most possession of the ball, you're controlling the game, when really it's just not the case. I think when I watched Hull and midweek, and when I have watched them, a lot of their players in their own half, in their third, they'll try and play from side to side. And I just don't understand it. I'm like, just get the ball up the pitch and you'd be fine. You've got the players to do it. The idea of that, the possession side of things is just really interesting, but I just don't think it's very true. You can definitely control the game by not having much of the ball. But he did say they dominated the game, Matt, well, after his post-match on BBC. Is it Humberside? Or is it Hull? I don't know. Anyway, yeah, Humberside, thanks to our residential BBC reporter.
I don't know if it actually is. I was just nodding my head anyway. I'm just assuming it is.
It could be. Who knows? I'm going to say that anyway because it sounds great. But I'd be keen to hear what you think, Matt. Do you think that they did dominate the game?
I think there's a difference between controlling the game with more possession and dominating the game. I think they had a lot of possession and pressure in our final third. But if you look at it, Senny wasn't bombarded having to make save after save after save. He made one very good save from a header. I don't know if it was Greaves who headed it down and he tipped it wide. But you know, like we were saying this earlier, Borough were arguably just as culpable for Hull's goals as Hull were themselves. You know, we worked for our goals. We scored two very good goals. Hull scored from a cross. There was just one of them awkward ones that the keeper can't do anything about. I remember Morgan Whittaker scored a similar goal against us for Plymouth earlier in the season from a free kick. It's just one of them. And then the second goal was completely all our own doing. So as much as Rossini can argue that they controlled the game, without that maybe a slight bit of good fortune with the cross and Dieng dropping a bit of a howler. And on the basis of what we saw, Borough would have probably won that game. So, yeah, I don't agree that they dominated at all. Maybe they had more possession. Maybe they spent more time in our defensive third than we did in theirs. But, yeah, I wouldn't say they dominated the game. I think it's just, yeah, on another day, Borough, as you said at the start, Johnny, Borough probably, maybe, should have, could have won the game.
Well, let's move away from Hull now and chat about Ipswich, because we went into the game, you know, Borough's record isn't great at Ipswich at all. You know, we don't really get many results there. And also, they're absolutely flying. And, you know, of course, for the neutral, it was ex-former Manchester United coach versus ex-former Manchester United coach. And two very successful ones as well. But what did you guys make of the game? Because I thought Ipswich were a lot better this time around than when we've seen them at the Riverside, even though they played really well, I thought, at the Riverside. I thought it was more of the Ipswich that I was expecting when they came to the Riverside. But I'd be keen to see what you guys made of the game and see if the result was probably the right one. So who wants to go first, Dan? Do you want to take it? And then we'll go to you, Matt.
Yeah, I'll take it. I thought it was a captivating, enthralling game. Another enjoyable one this week. And it had plenty of incident in it. Plenty of incidents that the referee just didn't want to acknowledge, apparently. Like Hladke running out of the box with the ball in his hand. Like, hello, how did no one see that? I mean, yeah, I'm sure they did.
I don't get why he didn't do it. I don't get why he didn't bother. It's like, he's about a yard out, isn't he? Like, did he just like just fall asleep or something? Like, because everyone like just stopped, wasn't it? Everyone was like, that's clearly out.
Maddo said the linesman did put his, he went to put his flag up and then didn't. So I'd be intrigued to see if that was at the Riverside, whether he would have gave that or not.
Yeah, he bottled it, didn't he? It was such a strange decision, or non-decision. But yeah, I thought Ipswich, they looked dangerous out wide. Sarmiento and Hutchinson, they had a big influence on the game. I'm surprised that McKenna took Sarmiento off, because I thought he was troubling Rav Vandenberg, which is not something that we've really said so much of this season. I think Borough's left-hand side did struggle throughout the game just because of how they wanted to control the ball in the middle of the pitch. We saw Sam Morsey get on the ball a lot in the opening phases, was really the one that kept them ticking. But then they hit us out wide all the time. And I think our left-hand side, Silvera and Engel, struggled with that in particular. But I will say, to credit Engel, I thought he did grow into the game and was much better in that second half. He made a wonderful block from Hutchinson. I thought he was destined to ripple into the back of the net, and he just gets that thigh on it, which was brilliant, to dab it behind for a corner. So I think the players overall had to be really strong defensively to stop that Ipswich pressure, which we had to really withstand for large periods of the game, and particularly that second half, resulting in a winner. And we withstood it whilst also posing a threat of our own on the counter-attack. And I was it was so frustrating that we didn't manage to get that winner, because we had a massive chance. That I keep replaying that Clark header in my head. It was one hell of a save from Hladke, because I thought that was going in. I was like warning with my hands behind my head, like in angst at the end of the game, because I was thinking, can we not just get that? It was back and forth. It was a really, really good, high-quality football match, I thought. And yeah, either side could have nicked it. Good game.
Yeah, I'd agree completely. It was an enthralling game. It's exactly what I was expecting, to be honest, because you look at Ipswich at home, the chances they create, the goals they've scored this season, you just expect them to come flying out the blocks and bombard us. But we equally matched it, and I thought we gave just as good as we got. Arguably could have won it ourselves at the end. It was a fantastic game. And it wasn't, I think Portman Road's it's like a cauldron of energy. And at the minute, it's just such a difficult place to go. Obviously, they had an open door to take full grasp and control of the automatic promotion race. So I was going into that game thinking they have got the biggest motivation to beat us here. And that might make it even more tougher for us. And it's not like Ipswich were nervy or on edge or anything. They went for it. And they played some good stuff, and Borough absolutely matched them, you know, blow for blow. And yeah, that second half, I mean, Jones, he should have scored. I can't believe he's anywhere but there, and he would have probably scored.
Anyone but him.
And then the save from Clark's header, I thought it was in. I was off my sofa ready to celebrate. I couldn't believe the keeper tipped it over the bar. So yeah, fantastic game. Obviously, it's a shame that by that point, a draw wasn't really helping us much, but to go there and to follow up the Blackburn result at Leeds and Plymouth, you know, I sort of looked at what results had happened to the other promotion contenders, and I thought, Borough, don't let down the narrative. Don't get walloped 4-0. You know, let's play the role of promotion wrecking Reds again. And I think we did. I think we did so well. And again, it's another performance which you can pull out positives looking ahead to next season.
Yeah, and I think for me, it kind of adds to more of a frustration to Borough, to be honest, because against the teams around us in that top eight, top nine, we've done so well against them. We've got better results most of the time. And, you know, it's just that bottom eight as well. That's just really screwed us. And it's just frustrating because it shows that we can more or less compete at the top, but also get really good results. And even with the amount of injuries that we have, it shows that we're still a good side. And, you know, again, could have won the game, probably should have with the chances that we had. And also, like, with the goalkeeper being on the pitch, like, you don't know if, like, what happened. There's so many if, buts, and maybes in that game, isn't there? Like, as Grant Leber famously once said, that's football.
I think, is it not a yellow card I think it's a yellow and a free kick. I mean, to be fair, the free kick wouldn't have gone anywhere, would it? It probably would have hit the wall, but, you know, still.
Yeah. I mean, just put Matt Clark on it and see what happens. You know what I mean? Just drill it. But I thought he was going to score. I genuinely thought it was in. Well, same as you, Matt. I thought his header was in. Couldn't have placed it any better. But there's chances in that game. You know, I'm thinking Engel's header. I'm thinking of Jones's miss as well. Clark's chance. There's a lot of different moments where you think, oh, well, to be fair, Silvera, when he gets on his left foot and just absolutely skies it, there's chances, and it's frustrating. I think it's a sorry Borough season, you know, getting into great positions and not taking advantage of it. But there's a player, Matt, who is taking advantage of a lot of chances at the minute, and it's Manuel Latia-Laff. You know, I've been missing on this podcast for the last few weeks, but ever since then, he's just came into himself, and, you know, he's just become a good goal scorer. He's, you know, if he was playing 46 games, he'd never be on 26 goals with the goal per minute he's on, 155 goals. So how would we continue to get the best out of him next season? Because it's great being in form now, but the next season can be completely different. So how do you think we can continue to get the best out of him?
I think we keep him fit. That is the absolute be all and end all. I think, I don't know how we do that. I don't know, again, if it's down to just bad luck this season or whatever it has been. Keep him fit. We desperately need that focal point, that centre forward up top who's fit for the majority of the season, because if he's in form like this, you can see how much he can contribute. I mean, he's scoring so many different types of goals. He's, I think, quite underrated aerially. I mean, it's a fantastic header yesterday and at the ground in the corner. We've seen him score so many different goals, left foot, right foot, header. He's really showing like some really good all-round attributes at the minute, Latia-Laff. And I saw a stat on Twitter. It was from Borough Form. And looking at all the forwards, the highest XG per 90 minutes of the Championship players with 20 or more starts this season, Latia-Laff's actually the second highest for the highest XG per 90. Only Josh Sargent's ahead of him with 0.65. Last second with 0.59 XG per 90. He's ahead of Che Adams, Adam Armstrong, and Hadji Wright. So it's not like we're not giving him chances. You know, we're creating chances. His XG every game is up there with the highest in the league. So for me, if we keep him fit and just keep feeding him the chances that we are, again, tentative with Borough and centre forwards, but you'd like to think, looking at the stats, looking at the momentum and the form he's on, just keep feeding him. You know, like Ryback, feed me more, keep feeding him. I knew you'd like that wrestling reference, Johnny.
Enjoy that.
Keep feeding him. And he should hopefully keep burying the chances next season. And if he does, then we could be in front of the 20-plus goal a season striker quite easily.
Yeah, we could. You absolutely threw me off there with the Ryback reference there, Matt, to be honest. I was going to say it to you. But feed the Lath and he will score. If by the sounds of that, could be a T-shirt. There you go. Copyrighted, and also I'll be available on tside.co.uk very soon. But in terms of like him, Dan, though, it's his seventh goal in 9 games. Matt, I didn't know that was his figures in terms of XG as well. It also shows that he can massively underperform and miss really easy chances. But if you take Latia-Laff out of it, then if you look at Borough signings from the year now, or the last couple of seasons, it does show a number of like positive signs that the recruitment, the way we're going, it's going in the right direction, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%. And I think credit to Aiton Muse on Fly Me to the Moon that kind of prompted us to discuss this. Excuse me, because I think it's worth it. You know, the recruitment team get a lot of flack, and Kieran Scott is kind of the face of that in our YouTube comments always gets a little bit of criticism, quite a lot of criticism, actually. But if I look at the list of players that I think have been hit Riley McGree, Ryan Giles, Darren Lenihan, Marcus Force, Matt Clark, Cameron Archer, Aaron Ramsey, Rav Vandenberg, Morgan Rogers, Seni Dieng, Emmanuel Latit-Lath. I think Finn Azaz will join that list as well, I'd say. Like, of course, you're always going to get signers that don't quite work out. And sometimes it isn't just to do with their quality. Sometimes it is to do with the manager might not fancy him. He might not fit the current system. The system might change. And then all of a sudden they're kind of thrown through a little bit of a loop. Sometimes they might not settle. Martin Piero, the prime example of that. So you will always get, and even at the top of the game, like Michael Edwards at Liverpool, I remember when they signed Arthur from Barcelona, I think it was.
Yeah.
Really, really poor signing in the end. But they've signed so many good players. Like, even the best recruitment teams in the world get things wrong. And sometimes you can't even say that they get things wrong, because they might actually sign a good player that you think is going to work out at the club, and they just don't. But I do think it's worth, for all the criticisms that the recruitment team get, I do think it's worth giving them credit. And there's a lot of players in, well, every one of those players in that list that I just mentioned have been really good signings for us. And there's still signings there that are to come that will probably end up being good signings with time. I think Lucas Engel's probably one of those, Johnny. So it's worth giving them that praise. It's a different model. Like Morgan Rogers, for example, the prime example of this. You bring in a player from a fairly low fee and you really tap into that potential. Some people will say, why did we sell Morgan Rogers? We're not a parachute payment team. We have to sell our players to basically keep ourselves afloat. Like, it's a really difficult financial market, and you've really got to sell your assets, develop them firstly as much as you can in the time that you've got them, and then sell them on. So I am really quite liking the recruitment team's model and what they're bringing us at the moment, and I'm really excited for the summer, because I think more players will probably be added to that hit list.
Yeah, I hope so too. And obviously you mentioned Engel there. I'd also like to see Bangura the next year. Like, I know he's had a couple of injuries, but when he has played, he's been really good. And I would also like to see, maybe, you know, and we spoke about it probably a few podcasts ago now, but around the aspect of having Engel or Bangura further up the pitch, playing with an actual winger, because for me, Engel has really good delivery. So for him to, if you want to mitigate his defensive vulnerabilities, to play him higher up the pitch, to stretch a game out, play with actual wingers and whip the ball in the box, I think it just works. And you've got that Bangura in terms of pace and recovery. There's just options that you can have. And if you've got different options and you've got players that can cause teams problems in all different parts of the pitch, that's how you become a really dangerous team. And we just need to keep building on that. But yeah, I would say we was doing that. There's more positives than negatives in terms of recruitment. And you know what? You're not going to get them all right. But sometimes if you 75% of them are good, then you're not a winner.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
I kind of want to take a step back now and just talk about the games in general from the week, because it's 2 points, Matt, against playoff and automatic teams. So do you think, and I know I've kind of said it at the start, but do you think we could have got more this week?
Yeah, I think the whole game especially is one where we, I wouldn't say reverted back to the Borough of earlier in the season, because we have improved. But I think, yeah, giving up low XG goals with the cross going in and the individual error from Seni. We've seen a lot less individual errors recently than we had at the start of the season, with the number of clean sheets we've had of late as well. So the whole game does feel like one that, yeah, if we cut their mistakes out, we should win the game. I think Ipswich is more of a difficult one to call, because their goalkeeper made some really good saves. I recall Seni made a pretty good save in the second half. They also hit the post in the first half. I think Sarmiento had a shot that sort of trickled around the side of the goal, and it's like the world just went into like the Matrix at that point. It was like everything went in super slow motion, and it was like, is it gonna go in? And it didn't hit the post, thankfully. So Ipswich was more of a maybe a basketball 50-50 game, where both sides could make an argument that they could have, should have won it. But Hull definitely is a game I look back on now and think we maybe should have took all 3 points from that. And our playoff hopes would have lasted a few days longer, albeit we'd probably still be in the same sort of position we are now. So, yeah, it's a shame that we didn't come out of it with more. But again, performance-wise, at the very least, I take more than enough positives out of these two games heading into next season that we can compete with these teams and arguably at times we should be beating them.
And look, at the end of the season now, Dan, there's three games left. There is three games left, yeah. I got that, three or four games left. Yeah. I keep, honestly, I'm at a point now where I'm just like, this season just feels very long. But what would you like to see in the final few games for Bora now and just build, obviously we're building the next season. And what would you like to see from us?
I'd like to see us continue the unbeaten run and to beat Leeds. And I'd also like to see Alex Gilbert score so that my pre-season ball prediction isn't embarrassing. So yeah, keep the unbeaten run going, specifically beat Leeds and Alex Gilbert, please can you score a goal? That's what I'd like to see.
But wasn't yours like, was it goal contribution or was it outscore? Alex Gilbert one.
It was that Alex Gilbert's going to outscore Tuber at Pom this season. And technically, he literally just needs a goal because Tuber for Bora this season hasn't fucking scored. So like, one goal, I just need one goal. Yeah. It's not happening, is it? He can't get on the pitch.
So he's only played, what, 60, 70 minutes or something this year in the league?
He's like Martin Craney. He comes on like the last 5 minutes and then we just don't see him start. So yeah.
The same number as Martin Craney as well. Same number.
Oh, might yeah, he is.
It might be a 14 thing, yeah.
Yeah, there's something in that number 14, isn't there?
Yeah. Well, speaking of Martin Craney, when we had Tommy Smith on the podcast this week, Tommy Smith got subbed in the playoff final for Martin Craney in the 18th minute.
What a segue, Johnny.
So what a way to bring it in. But we did have Tommy Smith on the pod this week, so we're going to take a little breather for a minute while you guys see a little snippet more podcast with Tommy Smith.
But in terms of the next 12 months, obviously 12 months left on your deal, what are your personal ambitions for next season at the club?
Right now, I mean, I don't look too far ahead. That's one thing the manager said to me, actually, when I first got injured. A very good bit of advice, actually. I remember he called me a couple of days after I got injured and just said, listen, he said, the best bit of advice I can give you is don't look too far ahead. He said, do small milestones. He said that way they're a lot more achievable, you know, in terms of your milestones that you're doing. Instead of saying, right, I want to be fit on that day next year or whatever, or I want to, in 7 months, I want to be able to do that. He said, just do a milestone at a time. And to be fair, that's what I've sort of been doing. You know, he was sort of saying, do it every month you want to be there, every month you want to be there. So from a personal point of view, I just need to get back fit. I need to get back on the grass. I've missed it enormously. The day-to-day runnings of being a player and being on the grass and training and travelling to games and all that sort of stuff. So my immediate ambition and goal is to just get back with the lads and get to a level where I can be considered to play again. Because at the minute, I feel like I've missed that so, so much.
So obviously this podcast is out for our Patreon subscribers. So if you want to subscribe to our Patreon and listen to Tommy Smith's interview, you can do right now. It's in the link in the description below on YouTube, but also in your podcast provider as well. It's in our Telegram chat too, but I'll come to that just a little bit later on. But for right now, this is or is going to be the present place. Ah, yes, the present place. The only place where I'd give praise to a Bora player, a coach and staff member, a fan, Dana's lovely jumper, Matt's hair, and so much more. But guys, present place, who are going to be our picks this week? Matt, I'll come to you first. Who's going to be in your present place this week?
I feel like Latilath's got a bit of a permanent residency in there at the moment with the form he's on. I can't not have him in there again. Fantastic finish against Hull with his weaker foot. Brilliant how he took the ball down and put it. Was it under the keeper, by the side of the keeper? It was a great finish anyway. And then the header, again, as I say, you know, just scoring a variety of goals, which is great. Another one is Luke Ayling. I'm really starting to not only appreciate how kind of solid he is defensively, but how good his delivery is. I think he might have 6 or 7 assists now. And that's just since January. And I recall a stat that he's now the highest assister, I think, in Bora's team, in their current squad. And he's only been here since January. So I'm starting to look at what Luke Ayling offers us, not only defensively, but going forward. And as I said on last week's podcast, I don't know actually where you are with Luke Ayling, Johnny, but I have U-turned on him and I want him to sort of stick around. I know Dana's still a bit like this. Tom's almost there. Where are you at, Johnny, with Luke Ayling? Are you U-turning? Are you like absolutely no? Do you think we should?
I feel like I'm gonna get asked this question a couple of times today because I'm speaking to all stats, aren't we, pretty much after this. So but I think with Luke Ayling, it's an interesting one. If the deal's right, you take it because you've got experience there. But if it's like obviously it's gonna be a wages thing, to be honest, with Luke Ayling, because he's on good money at Leeds. He's coming to the end of that contract. He's got to be sensible, I think, of what his wage demands will be. He's definitely improved since he's came in. It's one of those things where how many years would you like to give Luke Ayling to be at the club? Because there's some players that can come in and you can get him on a two-year deal and then they'll just flop instantly. The legs just go. Or you could have an alternative where Johnny Howson just keeps getting better and better and better and better. And I don't know how he's doing it. Probably blood doping or something. But it's for me, it's an interesting one. It's going to be... We know that Tommy Smith's going to be back late in the preseason, so there's going to be a gap there. For me, I would like us to probably bring in someone with more resale value, but I can't knock his performances on that. I really can't. I think everything that he's done since he's came in has been sensible. It's been a good sign. It's steady away, good leadership. And we said, and I think when we're previewing Luke Ayling, that he's always good at getting balls in the box. So we're starting to see that as well. So can't say I'm 100% sold, but it's if the deal's right, you take it, don't you? But what would you like to do? Do you want to see him for another 2 or 3 years, or would you just want to give him a 1 year deal? I think there's so much part of the deal. But in terms of player, I think he's been really solid. And he's actually in my present place as well. So congratulations, Luke, you're in my present place too. So, well, Dana, do you want to round it off? Because I feel like mine's just been, I can't add to that now.
Yeah, I'm going to praise two moments from two players. Firstly, I will mention that Matt Clark was excellent against Hull. I did mention that when I was reviewing that game. But there was a tackle in the second half on Billy Sharp, who I thought, I completely forgot he existed. When I saw he was on Hull's bench, I was like, fucking hell, have I teleported back in time? But there was a tackle that he made in the second half, which was just visually excellent. He kind of sits down into it. He watches it all the way and he just crunches into Billy Sharp, proper old school tackle there. And then I also want to mention the Rav Vandenberg tackle on Connor Chaplin yesterday, which I thought, ooh, that's a bit of a... It's like teetering on the edge. But then when I saw the replay, it's such a good tackle from him. I mean, Rav, I thought on the whole, struggled a little bit yesterday because I think players were getting around him a little bit too easily. But that is fantastic recovery. And you have to say that he's kind of making a little bit, he's starting to make a little bit of a habit of that, those recovery challenges. He's such a composed, measured defender when it comes to those really clutch moments. So there's two moments there that I want to make sure that I mention. But I also want to throw Finn Azaz in there because I think he's building. He did wilt a little bit in the game yesterday against Ipswich, but I think I'm seeing a lot of progress from him, little improvements game to game. And I kind of reviewed a few clips of his from his time at Borough so far the other day on Y Scout, and I'm just starting to see things really develop, and he will be a key player for us next season, make no doubt about that.
Yeah, it's just clicking, isn't it? And I think positions take, it depends on what position you are, how long it takes for you to develop. If you're a goalkeeper, you can develop fairly quickly. Whereas like an attacking like 10 or a winger, and having those different instructions just gives you something different to think about. You know, he's played at Plymouth for a long time. It's been engraved in for 2 or 3 years. It just takes you those moments just to really adjust. But there's quality there with Finn Azaz. I think he's going to be mega for us next year. I really do. I'm really excited for him. But then it's on that Matt Clark tackle. I don't know if you've clocked it, but I actually want to review Billy Sharp's dive here. Because when he gets caught, it's lovely. There we go. He's diving in the pool. He's ready to do his front stroke. And he's in a swimming gala.
But fantastic superb
tackle. Definitely have Neil Warnock going like, fucking tackle.
Warnie would have loved that. Yeah, Warnie would love it.
He would have loved it. But yeah, shout out to Matt Clark as well. He's been superb too. But let's move on to podcast questions. Fire! Fire! Podcast question time now. Every week you get the chance to ask us a question on the Board Breakdown by tweeting us at Board underscore Breakdown, email the Board Breakdown hotmail.com, or by joining our Telegram chat with over 400 Borough fans, chant everything but Borough. We've just got the one question this week, and it's from Andrew, and he says, what do we do with Silvera next season? Silvera came into the team against Ipswich for Sam Greenwood, but I can't really say that, you know, he brought the house down. If anything, he really annoyed me with his performance. But Dana, you're not a huge Sammy Silvera fan, I don't think. So what do you do with Sammy Silvera? And Matt, I'll come to you as well. But Dana, what do you think?
I think you loan him out next season. But it depends on where Borough want to be in the next campaign. Because if they want to just simply exist in the Championship, then I think they can afford to carry a player like Silvera and just allow him to develop and improve through game time. But if we're wanting to challenge for promotion or challenge for the playoffs, I don't think you can carry a player like Silvera, who just, I know that he hasn't had a lot of starts. I do believe he's had 13. I did read a tweet from BBC T saying that he's had 13 this season. So it's not as if he's had fleeting moments like Alex Gilbert. But whenever I see him play, I just get really frustrated. I think he's a player that is beneath the level that we're probably wanting, or at least I'm wanting as a fan. And he's probably the reason why Sam Greenwood has gotten the opportunities that he's got, despite not really performing particularly well himself. So for me with Silvera, I'm not going to write him off completely, despite how frustrating he makes me feel. But I think if you're looking towards a summer move, you're probably looking to loan him out, maybe to the top end of League One or towards the bottom of the Championship. I know that we were vying with Plymouth for his signature before he decided on Borough, so maybe Plymouth. But he's just not quite good enough right now for me. The wide areas are actually an interesting position because I think we need more quality there. Controversial opinion, Jones doesn't start for me. He's a bench player. I'm not going to clip this up and put it on Twitter because I'll probably get absolutely roasted, but he's not a starter for me. Silvera is not a bench player. He should be loaned out. And yeah, Greenwood, I don't really see being here next season. There's only Riley McGree that gives you that genuine quality out wide, in my opinion. I don't know what you think, Johnny, about Jones.
Thanks for throwing under the bus there, Dana, because I was going to say, don't read all our text messages from yesterday. But yeah, look, for me and Jones, man, I just get so frustrated with him. I really do. I think you'd get $5 million, you sell him. Personally, I watch him and I get, every time he's in front of goal, I just know he's missed. And I shouldn't have that feeling. I'm not confident in that, but he can be a dangerous player. He's very impactful and he's created a lot of really good opportunities for us. And I still think he has a place in the side. But I just think we need, like I said, wingers for me is a big, big thing for us next year. And I said on a podcast a few weeks ago that having an out-and-out left winger, an out-and-out right winger is giving you that ability just to be flexible and give Carrick the tools to change a game mid-game and have an influence in different areas. So we do need to shop for wingers, I would say, in the window for Isaiah Jones. I like him, but frustrates me. And if you had the opportunity to sell him, I probably would.
I like what he could potentially offer, and I'm going to keep banging this drum. If we can facilitate a style down that right-hand side where he can connect with the right centre midfielder and the right back and get him into those positions where, you know, we saw it with Crooks so often in Dykesdale where he'd combine with them and then Crooks would play that ball, slip that ball down the sides, and then he would get in behind the fullback and get to the byline and cut the cross back. If Jones is in a wide position on the kind of corner of the box and he puts a ball in, I know that that ball is not going to be a quality ball. I just know it. It's that soft touch that he has with his technique that I just keep banging on about. Like, I mean, it's the type of technique that I literally have playing foot golf and I'm shite. So, like, that's what really frustrates me. And the thing is I would rather have Jones at this club than not. And I will say that because I think, as you mentioned, he can come up with some really good moments in terms of getting us forward, being direct, offering us that genuine width. But we've seen very little improvement in his crossing ability. So it's like, okay, that's the thing. But what can we do to make sure that we're harnessing the good out of him? And if we can't do that, bring someone else in my opinion. I know we got Force there as well, but yeah, Sauber Thomas, yeah. Huddersfield, yeah. Maybe.
Yeah, but you can't rely on Max Force either because of his injury record at the moment. Yeah. So then it's difficult for that. And then you've got, I think you just have to go in the market for wingers, unfortunately. But the beauty of that is, right, if you're bringing in more wingers, is that it creates competition. And then I think Jones has been really fortunate to some aspect that he's not had the competition there over the last couple of seasons. You know, he's came in when it was Wilder, Tommy Smith came in as like second fiddle to it. You know, we've not really had someone who can displace him. And I think that can sometimes give you the inconsistency that you see because you know you're not going to get like your position taken from you, especially with like Silvera not being as good this year. It does create that, but there's improvement to be made. And it's a great thing to see to have improvement, but we'll see where it gets to. But Matt, what do you think? What do you do with, I know we kind of move this on to Isaiah Jones, but Sammy Silvera, what do you do with him next season? Like, if you have an opinion on Jones as well, just throw that in there as well.
Well, I don't know if I'm throwing myself to the wolves if I mention Jones as well. I kind of agree. I feel like with Jones, there is a very specific type of style of play that I think suits him. I think if you're wanting a winger who can do a bit of everything, can maybe adapt to different styles and maybe do different things when you need him to do different things, he's not really the winger for that. I think if you want to bring him on off the bench as an impact player to do a specific thing in a game, then yeah, he's fine for that. But I agree with you. I've never been massively sold on Force on the right as much as I think others. But again, you make a good point on his injury record as well. So yeah, I think Jones has a place in the side. I agree. Can we hang our hat on him fully to start every game and deliver? Probably not. As for Silvera, yeah, I've sort of clung on to the hope that he'll come good for a long time now. I remember in pre-season, he got quite a few goal contributions in our pre-season friendlies, and I looked at them at the start of the season. I was really excited by Sammy Silvera. I was rubbing my hands together thinking we might have a player on our hands here, but it's just not happened for him. And I think we were talking earlier about Borough's recruitment and the players we've brought in. I think there's an argument that most of them have improved in some form. We've seen some form of progression from them. You know, Azaz has improved, Rav's improved. You could go through the majority of the players we signed permanently and say, you know, there's an argument they've gotten better, but I don't see any progression in Silvera. He still feels like he's the same player that we signed in the summer. I don't think he's got the physical attributes that we need. I think he's a bit lightweight on the ball as well. He gets, you know, forced off by defenders quite easily. So I would loan him out. I think my only counter argument to that is what happens on the left-hand side, because if we lose McGree, we're in a bit of bother because Gilbert's not in a position to start there. Greenwood won't, and I don't think should be here next season. You've then only got Silvera, who again, you can't hang your hat on. So maybe then we look back to the point you made earlier, Johnny, and we maybe look to put Bangura further forward or Engel. And, you know, we maybe have Engel and Bangura as a pair down the left instead and do that. But yeah, I think we need investment in that part of the pitch anyway. And I just don't think Silvera's warranted the opportunity to be our starting left winger next season. And a loan would do him good. I wouldn't give up on him just yet. I think he needs to maybe show what he can do next season, whether that's a loan or whether it's at the Borough itself. But next season's a big one for him. If he can't prove himself next season, whether it's on loan at another club or at Borough, then I think his chance will be gone and we might look to get rid of him next summer. So it's a big season for him regardless of where he is. I think a lot of it depends on what we do with our current squad. But in a perfect world, I'd probably loan him out and I'd agree with that.
Yeah, it's crazy really because he was very, very bright in pre-season. Like very bright. Was. And there was a lot of excitement there. First few games, he had excitement. And then it could just be a really big confidence issue and having a bit impostery, not wanting to take much of a risk. And you see it in football. It's like you can tell when a footballer is just not fully confident the way that they pass a ball. Like it's always backwards or sideways. It's always that easy ball and it's never given someone a proper like chance or taking a risk. I don't think he's doing that. And I think you can see it in his play. But let's move on to the game next Monday because Borough face Leeds United at the Riverside. Leeds are very, very close to the automatic places and we really struggle against Leeds in the league. We always have. But guys, I am chatting to All Stats, aren't we, this week in opposition preview show. And we're going on theirs, they're coming on ours. So we'll get some really deep insight into that. But I'm keen to hear your prediction to the game. It's going to be really difficult for us, of course. Our unbeaten run is on the line. But Matt, what is your predictions against Leeds United next Monday?
I think we'll win. I do. I've got this niggly little feeling. I mean, they're under so much pressure right now, aren't they? I mean, they've really, really... I mean, I don't want to say Leeds are falling apart again, but they're sort of wobbling. The pressure's certainly getting to them. And yeah, they just look like a team that they just look short of confidence. I don't know if they're looking a bit desperate. And I'm not going to lie, I would love nothing more than Borough to be the ones that not quite put the final nail in the automatic promotion coffin for Leeds, but we might go a long way. As well, as you think about it as well, they'll be the last to play the top three. So if results go against them, Leicester and Ipswich win, the pressure on them to get something at Borough could be absolutely huge. And I just think hopefully with a good atmosphere, night game, under the lights, I just hope we'll have one of them really good nights at the Riverside. Plus it's my last home game of the season I'll be at, so I'm really hoping we go out on a high. So I think we'll win 2-1, and we might have some late limbs at the end with a late winner. Maybe that's just me in my dream scenario rather than a prediction, but that's what I'm hoping for anyway. 2-1 Borough. Laugh will score again.
I hope so. Dana, what are you going to go for?
It's a weird one, this, because I think the pressure's definitely on them, given that they've won just once in their last five games, which, you know, might be panic stations, just given where they find themselves in the season and the fact that there's three games left. You don't want to wobble. This is not the time for a wobble. So there's a little bit of pressure on, well, there's a lot of pressure on them and not any on us. So I was looking at our head-to-head, actually. The last time that we beat Leeds was the 2nd of March 2018, which was that game that Patrick Bamford scored a hat-trick in. It was the Adama and Bamford show, and then Martin Craney came on at the end for Bamford in the 90th minute. I am going to go with a 1-0 victory to Borough. I think it'll be tight. I think it will be a late goal, and I think we will continue the unbeaten run, but get back on the winning path.
Okay, then. And I'm going to go for 1-1. I think when we played Leeds at this point of the season, it feels so long ago.
January. End of the year or just before Christmas?
Matt Clark's first or second game back. For me, in that game, it was chaotic game. We scored first with Lailaf. We played really well in key moments, and the red card ruined the game for us, and we self-destructed again. But we created a lot of really good opportunities. We played through Leeds so, so well. So there's a lot of positives we could take in the game. A lot of pressure on Leeds to do well as well. So it's really going to be interesting dynamically for them. We have nothing to lose. We can go in that game with just confidence. But I'm going to go over 1-1 draw. I think it's going to be a really tough game for both of us. And if we can get something from the game and extend the run, then it's brilliant. But that's it, guys. Thank you very much for joining me, as always. The listeners and the viewers, if you like this video, do give us a 5-star rating on your podcast provider and like this YouTube video. But for right now, Borough keeping us sweet with an unbeaten run. And our glasses are half full, but Cadbury beat Leeds on Monday. This has been the Borough Breakdown Podcast, and that was like a Borough Matchday Chatter in a pod. Up the Borough.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.